Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel live broadcast and subsequent podcast. This is the next episode in our new series for 2024, Last Place and Proud of It, which celebrates the runners who have come last on some of the UK's most famous and most brutal ultras. So this episode, we'll be talking to the incredible Terry McCormick, who came 38th place and last person on the 135-mile Ring of Fire three-day ultra last August. So welcome, Terry. How are you doing today?
No, thanks. Really good. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Well, we've got tons of questions for you, Terry. But first, just a quick mention to our fantastic sponsor, NAC Sports Nutrition. They make energy bars, waffles, energy and recovery powders, and real food purees in pouches. And this Sunday, I used the drink powder in my long run after we had a chat from nutrition expert from NAC, Gregoire Guyot, last week. And he suggested that people should use the drink powder first and foremost, and I never do that. So I tried that on Sunday, and it went really well. I did really enjoy using the drink powder, but I did need to use the loo a lot more often because obviously it's in a drink, but that's probably better for me. So I'm going to continue using that. And I also really like that NAC use high quality sustainable ingredients. So go to uk.nac.com for more, and feel free to use my 15% discount code, which is in the film description below or the podcast show notes. It's Wild Ginger Running 15, I think. I've just managed to delete it from here. So yeah, go to the show notes to have a look at what that discount code is. So Terry, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for sparing your time to talk to us today. I want to read out something from Hannah, first of all, to make you feel awesome about yourself. Hannah says, awesome. Ring of Fire sounds really tough with tight cutoffs. Massive respect to anyone who completes it, especially with presumably the cutoffs breathing down your neck. So we'll get onto all of that in a minute. The Ring of Fire sounds absolutely incredible down in Anglesey. But let's wind the clock back. How did you get into running yourself, Terry? Where did your journey start?
To be honest, I've always been pretty sporty, so not so much running, but through school I played football, and I played semi-professional football for a long time. So I played in, funny enough, talking about Anglesey, I played in the Welsh Premier League for about 15 years. So sport had always been sort of quite big. I was a goalkeeper, so probably running wasn't the most, not famous for running.
Just jumping then, left and right?
Yeah.
Pretty good at that.
it's sort of the easy stuff. And then sort of the kids came along, and it's probably not conducive to sort of family life, travelling in and around Wales. So prior to COVID, I'd sort of had enough and sort of retired sort of just as we were heading into COVID. And then pretty much what happened is I went away from home for a couple of years. It then became acceptable to eat more and obviously drink more. And as a result, I put a bit of weight on, didn't do as much exercise. And when we came out of COVID or when we came out of lockdown and went back to work, I just didn't feel too great. And I went out for a 5K, you know, we typically would be okay. And I felt awful. I felt like it was January 2022, I think, and I just felt horrendous. So put a bit of a plan in place to sort of the Liverpool half marathon was the end of March, early April, obviously by the accident time from Liverpool. So it was okay, let's see if I can do the Liverpool half. Spent probably 10 or 12 weeks on sort of not so much a plan. I was quite naive to running, but sort of went out and just sort of, you know, done what I thought I should do. And you know, thankfully, you know, I had a decent Liverpool half. And then I just wanted to maintain that level of motivation, really, for running. Really lucky, my children dance at a dance school in Hoylake. So there's a running club that runs out of the car park behind it.
Wow, so now that is jammy.
Super perfect. And it's, you know, it's a small running club, UTS, which are, you know, they're brilliant sort of capers for all different type of abilities and distances. So more so I went into that just thinking maintain that level of sort of fitness and keep some of the weight off and just, you know, enjoy a bit of running. And then sort of the club was good. It taught me, I didn't even know people ran on trails. I didn't even realize that was a thing until sort of 18 months ago, 2 years ago.
Brilliant.
Tagged on some of the trail runs, and then it becomes chatting to people and they were talking about, oh, I'm doing this super long distance. I can't believe people running more than half a marathon. So once I sort of learned that, sort of tagged on, and then the more and more I'd done, the more sort of hooked I became.
Yeah.
I mean, you just end up, I think if you surround yourself and normalise the distances, you know, people are going out and running, you know, 50, 60, you know, 100 miles, 200 miles, and it just becomes normal and it's not such a big thing. So that really helped me. And as a result, I just sort of moved into the ultra distances and just progressed over time, really.
Yeah. And so what was your first ultra then?
So I'd done the Brennig Way 50K in October 2022, which is really good. It was a 50K. It was a really low-key event. It was Alfred Fitness, which, you know, based in North Wales. And it was, you know, there probably was only 25 people that done the event. Like, really, really nice. I finished that, felt okay, considering that was the longest I'd never gone past, sort of, I don't think I'd done a marathon before, certainly not on a trail.
Yeah.
It sort of settled into it and really enjoyed it. When I finished, it was, okay, what can I do next? So I think that was October 2022, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a leap then, but I suppose you had a sporting background, so you had that sort of fitness, residual kind of endurance and fitness within you, and then you just sort of turned it to running. And then what made you sign up to the Ring of Fire? Because it's one thing to do a 50K, which is like around 30 miles, but it's another thing to do a whole 135 miles over 3 days. So what made you sign up to that one?
I'd done something for charity last year. So for, I was turning 40 in 2023, and I wanted to do an event every month for charity. So a 12-month thing to keep motivation with the running and you know, generally just sort of try and raise some money for Alder Hey Children's Hospital in Liverpool. So each month I'd done something slightly different. So I think in the January I'd done a 35-miler, and then I'd done a couple of half marathons and as it sort of progressed, I'd done a couple of 50 milers and just sort of changed the plan as I went through the year, really. So I'd done the Pennine Barrier in May, which was 50 miles and was like stunning. And then in the July, I'd done Ultra Wales, which was slightly longer, about 55 miles. And at that point, I'd changed my job. Originally, I was going to run for charity from Blackburn to Liverpool along the canal, because I looked after a couple of offices and I thought I'd run between the two offices to raise money. I changed jobs, so then that wasn't a thing anymore. So I replaced it instead with the Ring of Fire. A friend had done it the year before, and often that's how I've sort of tagged on some of these races. It was he talked about how, you know, really positively and how much he enjoyed it. Had a little look. There's a brilliant video on YouTube by John Kinniston, and I seen that and watched that video back and thought, oh, do you know what, I really want to do it. And then sort of after I'd done the Ultra Wales, I just sort of jumped on it and yeah, Bit naively, but thought I'll give that a whirl.
Give that a whirl, yeah, excellent. Yeah. And is the Children's Hospital charity, is that something that's close to your heart, or are you just a saintly person that raises money for charity?
Yeah, I think it's, obviously I've got two small children, and my son, you know, everyone's healthy, but my son had spent a little bit of time in Alderhay. He had a cut on his nose, a nasty cut on his nose that needs some stitches, and he's had a little period of time in hospital where everything was fine, but just sort of seeing the children in the hospital and the good work that Alderhay is amazing, like such a good charity and such a good hospital. It was just a really good opportunity to raise a bit of money for them, really.
Yeah, just give something back. Yeah. I mean, sure. Yeah, you don't have to be entirely traumatised by an experience to go and raise money for charity, do you?
Exactly, exactly.
I'm glad that you have just, only been using the hospital for small accidents. So for somebody who is listening to this and they've maybe never even heard of the Ring of Fire, can you describe the race for us? Like, where does it start? Like, what's the route like and what's the terrain like?
Yeah, so it's based in Anglesey, which is an island just off the coast of North Wales. As you mentioned before, it's 135 miles of a loop, based over 3 days. So the breakdown is, day one is a 36-mile day, day two slightly longer with 66 miles, and day three finishes with 33 miles. Anglesey is stunning. So, I don't know if anyone, I would always advise people to go and have a little recce around, but what a lovely place. So we'd actually spent a few days there in the August for a recce. I'd done the Cubby Marathon, the Holyhead Marathon, and we stayed for a few days. It was brilliant. So the trail, it's not the most aggressive run in the world. You know, we spend a lot of time in North Wales up in Snowdon and things. There's a lot of climb. This is a lot more runnable. Day one, you start at the foot of the Holyhead Mountain. You run off, and the initial section is okay. And I think, you probably have the last 10 miles or so with quite a lot of elevation. But again, you're probably looking at about 3,500-4,000 feet of elevation, so not massive amounts. On the first day, it's running sort of combined with the Fire Lighter, which is a one-day event, so you both run the same distance, which is good because it means it's a little bit busier on the course. The second, so you run into, I think it was Alnwich, is the end of day one. So there's three checkpoints and two honesty books that you have to get on the first day. You've got 9 hours to complete day one, say lots of runnable sections. Day two, you start at 6 a.m. It's an 18-hour day in theory, unless you're super quick. You run pretty much the bottom half of Anglesey, running through some of the touristy places like O'Maris and Newborough Forest and places like that, which is really, really nice. Again, super runnable. There's probably only about 3,500-4,000 feet on the second day as well. Obviously over that 66 miles, so there's a lot of runnable sections. There are some road sections which sort of batter your feet a little bit, and there are some times where you have to amend the route a little bit because of the tide times.
Oh, okay. So it's all along the coast.
Yeah. So if you get lost, as long as you keep the water on the left hand side, you'll be okay. So that takes you into day two, which would finish, unfortunately very close to midnight for me, but wow. Midnight is the finish.
Yeah, 66 miles is a long way, isn't it? For one
it
day.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
like 100K.
Especially after a busy day the day before, and then the third day you're up and out by 6 a.m. again, and then there's a 33-mile section. Up over onto the Holyhead again, and then you finish. Probably it's quite a tough finish, really. So I think there's a decent bit of elevation at the latter part of the race where you're coming up over Holyhead Mountain, which is, it's a bit of a graft. It was absolutely roasting.
Oh, really? Because is it August the race takes place?
Yeah, so it's the last weekend in August. So going into September, so we had the heat wave. It was just before the Dragon's Back race, when they obviously it was super hot and they delayed.
Yes, 2023.
They had the enforced. Yeah, it was an enforced stop for the Dragon's Back, so it was really, really warm. Mm-hmm. But like really nice section again up over the mountain, and as you're finishing, you've probably got a mile and a half to go, and you can see the finish line as you're coming around the mountain.
Yeah,
and you can hear the music because obviously it's called the Ring of Fire, and they play the life out of the Ring of Fire song.
I played the video to watch about a bit of the course, and it was like that Ring of Fire song was playing and playing.
I think my kids met me at the end. My wife and my children met me at the end, and I think they won't even allow me to put Ring of Fire on in the car. They're traumatised with the amount of times they've heard it. Because unfortunately, I was towards the back, so they heard it several times.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that Vangelist song at UTMB that they play over and over again. And then if you video anything there, it gets you for copyright on YouTube, and it's really annoying. No. It's like, I don't want this song to be on here. we've got a live question from Severin coming in. I will ask you that in a mo, because I just want to talk a little bit about your training before we go into the actual how you felt on the race and stuff. But you've just talked about your kids a couple of times. Was it difficult to balance like your job and the kid and your social life? How did you fit in all the training and kind of what training were you doing for this?
I think because obviously I was relatively new into running, and I think the start of the year, because I was doing quite a lot of events, if I was to look at like the first four or five months of the year, I was quite flexible with my work patterns. So, you know, I work Monday to Friday, but I was able to finish a little bit earlier, and I spent quite a lot of time waiting for the children to come out of the dance classes. So I was doing an awful lot of running. I think leading into the Pennine Barrier, I think the month before, I was managing to post like 75-mile weeks, which I really, you know, I'd done really, really well with that time. However, unfortunately, I changed, well, not unfortunately, fortunately, actually, in hindsight, but I changed jobs at the back end of May into June. Which meant that I sort of affected my ability to train a little bit. I couldn't quite post the miles I was posting previous to that. I've still done some, you know, I mentioned I've done the Pennine Barrier, I've done the Ultra Wales, so there's still posting some decent runs. But whereas I would be doing like a 50-mile week with club sessions and things mixed in, I was having to drop that down a little bit. I'm quite lucky in a sense of my wife works part-time, and she's great with there's no real pressure on me going out and running. She's fine with that most of the time.
Does she run as well?
No, she'll do some small, like, so she'll go to the gym, or she'll do, you know, some of the, we got a park near to us, so she'll go and do some 5Ks in the park and things like that. Yeah. So a lot of my time was spent sort of in work towards the latter end of the post June, really leading into the race. So I did go into the race relatively confident. I'd done some decent enough miles. I'd done the Holyhead Marathon probably about 3 weeks before, and I finished well and felt strong. So when I got in, I think you mentioned before about the tight cutoffs. I'd looked at the cutoffs and like typically I'm not the fastest runner in the world, that's for sure. But I've never really worried about cutoff before. So when I'd done the previous races, I was in probably the top 20-25% of the course, and I felt fine. Mm-hmm. So when I went into this, I was okay on the cutoffs, I thought. but the race didn't quite plan out the way I wanted it to. And as a result, I found that I was chasing cutoffs. I think somebody mentioned before, I was looking at them every time I came into a checkpoint. It was, how long have I got till I have to get back out again? It's a wedding confident, but yeah, it soon unraveled a little bit.
Yeah, well, we've got a great question here from Severine, who says, how did you cope with the mental pressure of being last? Were you worried about the cutoffs? Yes. And how did you find that? Any tips welcome.
I think, to be honest, because it's an accumulative time, I wasn't actually last on any day, but I was towards the back. So unfortunately, what would happen is you get to a checkpoint and I'd go past people and then know the people behind me. And unfortunately, they would get timed out at the checkpoint, or they'd drop. It was stressful. You know, I remember going into checkpoints. You know, if we look at the first day, for example, I'd had a plan in place on where I wanted to be and what time. And the first day we didn't go to plan. So it was super hot, and I got to about 4 or 5 miles, and I wasn't going quick. I was probably 11, 12, maybe 10, 11 minute mile, and it was loads of runnable sections, and my tummy just took a bit of a dive.
That is my fast pace, just saying, 10 minute miles.
But it was really runnable. It wasn't like really, you know, traily or anything. It was fine.
Even on roads.
So, like I said, my tummy took a bit of a dive, and I think in hindsight, I use Tailwind quite a lot, and I don't drink caffeine. Typically, I don't drink tea or coffee or anything like that. So I tried the caffeinated Tailwind, and naively, I think that mixed with the temperature sort of really affected me. So I spent you know, the first day, I think the first checkpoint I went in, I was probably 45 minutes to an hour up on times, which was fine, but I wasn't feeling great. And then after that, I sort of spent the next, what will that be, the next 27, 28 miles of throwing up.
Oh, God.
It was pretty brutal. I'd never been sick on a race before.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was quite sort of aggressive. You know, I was, for the first few times, I was sort of quite violently sick. And then I just found myself sort of dropping back. And I think with the temperature as well, I couldn't get any fluid down. I couldn't eat really. So I realised at that point I was getting closer to cutoffs. And it became, you know, I'd get into the checkpoint and, you know, if I filled a water bottle up, I'd fill a water bottle up and then I'd just straight back out again. I was panicking, thinking, okay, if I don't get out now, I'm gonna sort of potentially miss. It got to the point where when I was being sick, it was more like just, sounds a bit minging really, but I was just sick while I was running and just sort of popped my head to the side just to think, because I knew I was going to be close on cutoffs.
That's pretty badass.
But it didn't feel badass at the time. Honestly, it felt pretty rubbish.
Someone else would have just gone, it's really hot, my fueling's not gone right, my stomach really hurts, I'm going to quit. What was it inside you that just made you? Was it your professional football training, or is it something that we can all do?
Do you know what? There's a quote I'd heard somewhere or other around sort of puke and rally. And there were, you know, I think it will pass. I think if you slow down, it will pass. It didn't really pass, unfortunately, on that day. But I just kept thinking, you know, I'm not dropping out because I'm not injured or anything. There's, you know, I'm sick. It's fine. You know, my leg's not going to fall off or anything like that. However, if I get timed out and someone tells me I have to stop, well, that's different. But I'm not actually just going to stop myself, not for a bug. So, thankfully, I finished. I think I had about 10 minutes to finish. Finished about 10 minutes to go. I was quite lucky. I tagged onto a guy called Gordon Hughes, who's like does an awful lot of running. He was a friend of a friend who I was running with. And I just managed to tag on to him after that final checkpoint, and he navved, he'd done it numerous times before, and I just sort of fell in behind with him, and thankfully, you know, 10 minutes to spare, we came into the checkpoint. So at that point, there was probably, obviously the people who timed out, but there was probably four or five people behind us on that day, so I knew, you know, I wasn't lasting that given day. I didn't have the best of nights in a sense of I couldn't really eat, but actually, once I'd had the sleep, and it's mentioned about the event before, on the first night, you sleep in a large sports centre in Norwich. Really, you know, interesting, really, really, really cool, because you're surrounded by all the other runners. You know, you don't get a lot of sleep. It's quite noisy. The lights are on. And so probably only slept for maybe 2 or 3 hours tops. But actually, it was amazing. I woke up the next morning. They walk around, they mentioned about the Ring of Fire song. They walk around at about 4:30 in the morning with it playing on the mobile phone, waking everybody up. I felt loads better. I just managed to eat. I managed to have some porridge, some toast, get myself kitted up and ready to go. And that second day felt a lot better.
You must have felt so relieved, because 66 miles, to go into that feeling awful would have been horrible. So you felt a lot better on that day.
I think I was super dehydrated and probably a little bit, you know, a bit leggy. I hadn't ran that much really on day one because of... So my legs didn't actually feel too bad. They just felt a bit drained more than anything because I'd not really eaten or drank. So going into that second day, again, you know, the first 20 miles or so was fine. But then I had another issue that kicked off, and then I began chasing the cutoffs again.
What was this issue, the new issue?
My toe.
The horrible photo that you sent me.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Whilst you tell us about that, I'm going to get it because I've got it on my WhatsApp, but for some reason I can't get things to work properly. So if everybody is ready for a shock, I can send you this. How did the toe happen then?
Well, I think, obviously, I mentioned about the football, and typically when you play football, or what I used to do is I wear really tight football boots so that my feet didn't slip.
Okay,
And what was happening is my toes sort of squished together, so like my little toe tucks underneath the second toe a little bit.
Okay.
So I think after running for, you know, 50, 60 miles, my toe was just getting squished. And as a result, it then started to blister up. I mean, that was the furthest I'd done before, and it started to blister quite a lot. And then got sort of, it was a massive blood blister, and then So as the race went on, it just got really sore. I mean, I managed to take some painkillers and it was fine. We sort of got through it. But yeah, I wasn't able to move quite as quickly as I would have liked, really.
It's so horrible when you've got a blister like that. Like, I had blisters on the Cape Wrath Ultra that actually made me drop out on day four, but yours look even worse than mine. Right, okay, prepare yourselves. If you are squeamish, then look away now, because I am about to put a picture of... it's definitely a toe, but it looks like a Halloween thing.
Yeah,
okay, so this is Terry's toe. Another picture of it from the side as well. Yeah,
it wasn't the most pleasant. I think that was after the race, thankfully. So what happened is, as I finished that day, and we were chasing cutoffs and things, and when I finished, my toe was in a really bad state, and I wasn't in the best of places at that time. So, I had a shower and some food, and then sort of went to bed. And because it was late, there wasn't really anywhere to sleep. It was a bit cramped.
Did you patch it up on the way? Sorry, did you say that whilst I was fiddling
I can't remember if I taped it. I don't think I did. I may have taped it a little bit, but certainly not. The third day, I really put some work into it. So that night.
When did that happen on day two? Sorry,
I think it happened around sort of about 25, 30 miles in.
Okay.
It just started getting
halfway then.
Yeah, like, so it was throbbing quite a lot, and it was quite a big blood blister, and by the end of the day, when it sort of, it was so sore, it was really swollen, and
how did you make yourself keep going? How did you do that? Because like, you had a poorly tummy on the first day and now you've got this horrible toe. How did you do that?
I didn't really get the luck of the draw. I think it just kept, again, it's the same thing of just not wanting to pull out. I didn't realise my toe was going to be quite as bad as it was, but not wanting to pull out. I did swap some socks, I swapped some trainers, and I just thought, we were so close to the cutoff. There was a section when I was coming down, probably about 40 miles in. There's a really nice section at Sea Zoo, which is one of the checkpoints. And we were super close on cutoff. And I was running with a really nice guy. We'd spent about 10 miles together. And it was funny because the mentality difference. So I ran from checkpoint to checkpoint. I didn't look at the end distance. I knew that would sort of affect my head if I thought, still got 26 miles to go at that point. So it was just get to this checkpoint, get myself sorted and get back out as quick as I could. Whereas he was slightly different. So he was looking at the end goal. Oh my God, we've got 26 miles. We've got to be out for another 6 hours or whatever it is. And it was affecting me with he wasn't negative as such, but it was just the way he was verbalizing it.
Yeah. You're just like, I don't need to know that. That's not part of my mental health here.
Exactly. So I sort of remember going into CZU and thinking, okay, I need to get in and out, because we only had about 5 minutes on cutoff at that time. So I need to get in and out before he drops. Because if he drops, then, I didn't want him to drop, because he's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
But if he says at that point, okay, I'm not going on any further, which I thought he might do, could I get myself up and out again? So, the last mile, really nice section into it, it's a good runnable section. So I was in and out of the checkpoint before he got into the checkpoint and sort of left him a little bit. And tagged on to some guys after that. And I spent probably the next 6 or 7 miles with one of the lads that sort of just coming out the checkpoint just before me. And that was probably the strongest bit of the race I had.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Actually running alongside him, and we managed to make up some time. So I just sort of put the toe out of my mind, had some painkillers, and it was fine. I mean, the following morning I sort of woke up on the Sunday, I hadn't eaten, and during the night I thought to myself, I can't run if I can't walk. And it was throbbing every time I touched it in the night, and the sleeping bag was super, super sore. So I probably only slept for maybe an hour, broken sleep in the night. And I woke up, and it was brilliant because there was one guy, funny enough, he's a friend of mine, Amber. So she was running with me. It was her husband who was marshalling Nick. And he'd caught me being sick a couple of times on the first day and sort of called a medic or what have you. But he came across, and I was like, oh, Nick, look, my toe is really sore. Is there any medics that can have a look at my toe? And he said, look, we won't fix toes, you know. And what he said, is, I don't know if I can swear, but what he said is... put a pin in it, strap it up and fucking get out there was pretty much his words. And I thought, you know what? Yeah, okay, I'll give it a whirl and see how it goes. So I had nothing to pierce it with. I was a bit naive. Then I'm
ballistic. So you bit it with your own teeth.
If I had the flexibility, I might have. But I just took the pin off my running number and just stabbed it with that. And I think that's why it got infected, because it was a bit minging. I've got a brilliant video of lancing it and the amount of stuff that come out of it. But it was just so good afterwards that the pressure had been released.
Yeah.
Take it up, and I felt like a completely different person again.
Amazing.
It was brilliant. And it was fine for that third day until the last 10 miles or so.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that is the thing to do, isn't it? If the blister's really impeding you, you'd pop it, but hopefully with something sterile, and then put something sterile on it. But it's really hard to keep it, you know, if you've not got anything else, you just got to do what you need to do. At least you don't have to bite it off or anything drastic like that.
Oh, my goodness,
I'm very disappointed you didn't bite the blister off, though.
Sorry to disappoint.
Down as a complete hardcore. So I'm guessing from this, like, there's a question from Mike Haler, one of my patrons, who says, is it possible to do this without a support crew? So I'm guessing from what you've been saying, you don't need a support crew for all of this, but there are people that will patch, you know, like will help you with your blisters if needed. Is that?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, I'd actually did have my brother-in-law supported on the second and third day, thankfully, because the temperature was so hot that at that time it was... you know, it was getting up to sort of 30 degrees, I think, at one point. And I laugh and joke, like, my wife is ginger, my children are ginger, and I've got ginger skin, I think. Yeah,
yeah.
I
thought you were a little bit ginger. Welcome to the channel.
I think the temperature sort of affected it. And because the distances varied between checkpoints, you can go from anything from sort of 6 miles to, you know, there's a section that's the 12 mile section. So it was, you know, I wasn't moving that quick, so I could be out for 3 or 4 hours, depending on the distance, or maybe 2 or 3 hours. I would say if you can have somebody to crew, then brilliant. But there's enough people around, so the checkpoints are really good and well-catered. You know, it's also one of the best things about this race is that the people from the island are brilliant as well. So, you'd be in a bit of a hole. You'd come around the corner. And I remember a lady with two daughters stood there just handing out LucasAid Sports. And you know, they weren't involved in the race. They were just on the, you know, just off the beach having fun. And I went go past the shop on the second day. And, you know, the old guy was stood outside with a little picnic table and just giving sweets away and drinks and things. So it's a brilliant race. But, yeah, you can do it unaided and without a support crew. But if there's anybody that's willing to do it, then I've already blagged my brother-in-law to come back again when I do it in August.
You're doing it again?
I'm going to go again and hopefully not come last.
Oh, is that the aim then?
That's the aim, yeah.
That's the aim, yeah. And without a poorly toe.
Yeah, I've learned how to take my feet up now. So I've got some big races coming up this year. So I've been practicing with my taping. So and in short, you know, it's just taping the toe up so it doesn't tuck underneath the smaller, the next toe.
Yeah. And so... You mentioned the navigation as well. You said that was fairly straightforward, but then you mentioned that you got with someone who was navigating. So is there any areas where you can go wrong, or do you think it's pretty straightforward?
I think it's relatively, you know, as I said before, you're on the coast and you keep the water to the left, but, you know, it's not quite as simple as that. There are, you know, look, if we look at, we came through Newbury Forest in the dark, so that was pretty tough. There's a couple of, each day you've got a couple of honesty books like you would with the Barclays. It's
books. I thought you said honesty boxes, and I thought to donate some money.
This is the accent, I think.
Honesty books. Okay, yeah.
So you have to take a page
out of your race number.
You just take any page on this one, so it's not so bad.
And you just have to show them at the end, do you?
Yes. Yeah. So if you don't take the page, you would be it'd be a three-hour penalty, and the fine. But so there's elements there where, you know, I had it on my watch, so thankfully it was pretty straightforward. There are times where the tides come in, so there's definitely two or three, or certainly on day two. There's what's known as the stepping stones on day two, which is they're pretty much just stepping stones across the water. But if the tide's in, they're covered, so you would have to go a slightly different route around it.
Okay.
And we did go wrong one time on day two because the tide was in, and we went a slightly different way, and then we needed to track back a little bit, but not too far. There's opportunities to get lost, but if you've got the routes downloaded on the GPS, you should be fine.
Yeah, it'll alert you. I like that attitude. There's opportunities to get lost.
Yeah.
But yeah, keep the seat on your left.
Yeah, so try not to get your feet wet and you'll be fine.
Yeah. So you said the weather was really hot. The nutrition went badly on the first day, but then do you feel like the nutrition was okay on the second 2 days then?
I think because the temperature was so warm, it was really tough to eat anything.
Mm.
Typically I'm okay. I can normally get to about 30 miles or so before my stomach starts to turn. But I was struggling. I managed to get, I've never eaten so many Calippo lolly ices in my life.
Yeah. How many do you think you ate on the course of the race?
Double figures, 100% double figures.
Yeah.
On that second and third day. And I mentioned about the people on the course and you know, you come round and there was a van just sat there. And, the guys weren't involved in the race and they just had a cooler box full of Calippos. They were brilliant. And some of the checkpoints, you know, they would give them out as well. So because it was so warm, they were brilliant. I managed to get some custard and things down me, but yeah, I was struggling to eat anything properly. And I think from the first day, I struggled with the tailwinds. I just couldn't stomach that. I did have some sort of non-caffeinated, but even just the taste of it was I think it scarred me for a little bit. So I didn't run on the tail. Coca-Cola worked very well.
Yeah, but of course that's got caffeine as well, hasn't it?
Yeah.
If you don't, you're like me, I don't have any tea or coffee, proper tea or coffee, so it can scupper you. Today you was just picking up on the way marking of the course. He says, is it marked with signs, or are you following a coastal path, sort of a trail? What are you following on the way round?
So there are signs, and you know, it's a relatively, most of the places, the trail's decent enough to be able to follow. As I say, it's really tough to get lost, with the exception of, if you have to do any diversions because of the tide. I didn't find myself lost. I was a bit concerned on some of the books, because, you know, there was a section on day two where you would, you know, you almost had to track back a little bit across the beach, depending, because you can pick and choose on day two as you come through Newburgh. You can either go through the forest or you can go onto the beach. We decided to go to the forest because my brother-in-law was meeting me in the car park for sort of a mini checkpoint. So then we went through the forest and we had to track back along the beach for, you know, I don't know, quarter of a mile, whatever it might be. So there's sections like that where, you know, there's a variance you could take. But yeah, I think that the path and it's signposted well enough that I've not heard of anyone getting lost on it so far.
Yeah, well, that's good. Is there... Like, you're obviously going for it again. That was one of my future questions for you. But, is there anything that you wished you'd done differently? Now that you're bringing to next year's race?
Yeah, I think, obviously, the tailwind is, you know, don't do anything new on a race day. I thought I'd trained with the caffeinated thing. Maybe I hadn't. So I would certainly not use that again. My taping of the toes, I'll make sure that my toes are taped up a lot better next time. But other than that, no, I think respect that it's actually quite a long way. I was probably maybe a little bit naive to it at that point and how far it was, how tough it was going to be. The end of day one, I didn't take poles on day one. There's a bit of elevation towards the back end of the day. So potentially if you use poles, they could be, I can't remember whether you had your drop bag. So your drop bag will travel with you at certain stages. I can't remember whether you could collect them from there, but yeah, maybe get some, you know, poles to all the back end of the day would be beneficial, maybe.
Yeah. Because you stay in different places, then they take your stuff with you, and then you've also potentially got access to some kind of other drop bag as well.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So you'd have your overnight bag that they'd transport for you. So the first night is, as I mentioned, a really nice sports centre with really nice big showers, nice canteen. Second night, obviously, the volumes, the amount of people have dropped off a little bit. So it's a much smaller location, a much smaller shower. It was still ace, you know, still really, really cool. But it's a little bit more cramped on that second night, especially if you're coming in last.
Yeah. And when did you, because you obviously there was people behind you the whole time and they were then dropping out unbeknownst to you. When did you become aware that you were in last place? Did you even know?
In about 3 months ago.
Oh, right.
So I didn't know because of the way that it's an accumulative time. Mm. I certainly knew there were people finishing behind me on every day. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think day one, I had about 10 minutes to spare. Day two, I had about 4 minutes to spare. And day three was probably about 14, 15 minutes. And there was certainly a lady behind me on day three because it was brilliant when she finished. I was second to last on that day. And when she finished, you know, everyone cheered. It was really a nice vibe when she came through. So it was only probably when I rebooked for this year that I realised actually I'd come last. So it was a bit of a surprise, really.
And how did it make you feel?
Do you know what? Like, typically, I think the competitive element of football and things, normally I would be like, oh, my goodness, I finished last. But in reality, I understood that it was not the race that I'd planned. And, you know, I had some pretty crappy times where I could have dropped out. And better runners and more experienced runners than me did drop out. I think there's probably about a 50% dropout rate.
Wow.
So I'm fine with it. I came 38th, I think, or 39th, whatever it was. But then there was 80 people roughly that started. So
wow.
I see it as not finishing last. I was just the last finisher.
Yes. That's a really good way of saying it. It's not, you didn't finish last. You were just the last finisher.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good. I love that. And when you cross that finish line, like bear in mind your toe had started to hurt again, like 10 miles from the end.
Yeah.
What were your emotions coming across the finish line? Like, are you an emotional person? Did you see your kids and cry? Or like, what happened?
My wife would probably, Kelly would say, I am quite an emotional person. So I think watching movies and things, I'm a bit of a softie.
Yes, you know, me too. All hail the softie. I cry at Disney movies. I cried at The Good Dinosaur the other day.
Oh, The Good Dinosaur was brilliant.
It's so sad.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
His dad dies. Oh, I've ruined it for everyone now. Sorry.
Well, I think I didn't cry when I finished. It was really nice because, you know, on that third day I was doing okay, and it was only the coming down the mountain with the toe that really slowed me down, and some guys ended up, I was with about five or six people at that point, and I just couldn't move quick enough because it was really, really sore. So when I came in, I knew my wife was there, I knew the kids were there, and my mother-in-law came along as well. So I see them as I'm coming down, and I managed to finish with, you know, my daughter sort of pretty much dragged me over the end. You know, he was moving a lot quicker than me, and I didn't cry. I think there was a section on day 2 or 3, I forget, and I got a call from the wife of the kids, and it was, you know, I didn't blubber as such, but yeah, I sort of, you know, got a bit teary-eyed and thought, you know, it was quite nice that they said something like, come on, Dad, we know you can do it, and then sort of like, oh, God.
I have to do it.
There's no shame
in letting it all out, letting the stress out through some tears.
I think that's
really nice. I think it's important for, especially for men as well, to just admit, I have some feelings about this. And it doesn't mean you're not going to do it.
No, exactly. I think I'm fine with that. I'm a bit of a softie. I don't mind sort of shedding a tear every now and again if I'm doing it, you know, watching something or what have you. Maybe on you know, some of the future races, a bit of a finish and probably be blubbering like a baby.
Good for you. And how did your recovery go after the race then? So, because like before when I've done hard things, I've kind of run, sprinted to the end and then like completely couldn't even walk or get into a car. Did your daughter have to help you get over the finish line and then have a sit down?
I like a beer and things, and I remember coming towards the back end thinking, oh my God, I cannot wait to have a beer. And when it finished, they give you a bottle of beer, local beer, which is really nice. But I had about a mouthful and I just couldn't get it down. And unfortunately, I was sick again sort of soon after finishing. I think I'd just taken too much fluid on towards the end, which was fine. It was just water. Mm-hmm. We travelled back. I had actually drove and left my car there and I was going to drive back, but yeah, that was a no-go. So I left the car. My wife drove back. We stopped at McDonald's, which I don't really like McDonald's, but I had about three burgers and just sort of I went home. And like my body, the following day, my body was okay. Obviously, the toe wasn't, but my legs, surprisingly enough, were okay, and I could move and walk around. And you know, I drove back down to Anglesey the following day to get my car, and I felt okay. But after that, my obviously the toe was pretty minging. I'm really lucky. My wife's a nurse, so she you know, it did get quite affected and sort of tracked up my ankle, and so I managed to get some sort of pretty strong antibiotics to take away that infection. And the one that absolutely stunk, the toe was rotten. So it's
like a zombie toe.
It was like a zombie. It looked like cheese on toast. That's all. So,
I can't eat cheese on toast ever again now. But I was lucky for us, Terry.
She managed to cut a lot of the skin away, and she really, really looked after me. But I think it was like 3 weeks before I managed to get a pair of shoes on. And it probably set me back, you know, the latter end of last year. I didn't train as much because I'd lost a little bit of fitness, and I didn't really have anything long booked in for the latter part of the year. So yeah, I had quite a chilled couple of months after that.
Yeah, it sounds like you needed it.
Yeah, I think I did, yeah.
But I recommend Arc of Attrition if you like a January race.
I've got the winter spine next year, actually.
Really? What, the whole thing?
In January. Yeah.
You're doing the whole spine?
I hope so.
Wow. Okay. Well, with your sort of attitude towards setbacks and your flexibility for changing plans and just being okay with stuff, it sounds like you're exactly the type of person that would do really well on the spine.
Yeah. There's five from our club. I think there's 150 spaces that were opened up, and five from our small club managed to get in.
Wow.
So I mentioned before, there's quite a lot of guys within the group that do sort of super long stuff. A couple have just done the tunnel, 200 miler, and my good friend of mine done the North South Downs Way 200 miles. So yeah, they're sort of quite experienced with some of the longer things. So I've got the Northern Traverse in a couple of weeks. And then
is that 190 miles? That
yes,
across the whole of the top of the UK, like Wainwright's coast to coast type.
Yes,
of thing.
It is. Yes, yeah.
And
then you know that the aim is then to sort of hopefully push me on to do the winter spine.
Oh, wow, you're going long and you're going big and you're going winter. This is incredible. I'm just wondering, like, how long is your long run then? Because presumably you're running like a little bit in the week, but then when you do your long run, how long are they? And
typically leading into the Ring of Fire, I would normally do sort of back-to-back long weekends and things. And What I actually done in November, just to get some motivation again, obviously I'd had a bit of a downtime, I sort of went with a coach, Marcus Scottney.
Oh, brilliant, yeah.
Marcus is ace.
Also ginger.
Also ginger, yeah, there's a theme.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really do the back-to-back long weekends.
No, he's controversially against such things, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. So I think I'm in like a peak week at the moment. I've got another couple of weeks of training for the Northern Traverse, so I managed to, the week before last, the recce weekend in up sort of, around the lakes and what have you, from Sharp and Kirby Stevens and things. So I think the weekend was about 45 miles over the weekend.
Yeah.
I think this week.
In one day?
No, that was the Saturday, Sunday.
We recce. And Sunday,
About 22, 23 miles each day.
And how do you get away with not having to look after your kids then? Do you sort of take it in turns each weekend? Your wife gets one weekend, you get one weekend. And then your kids just think that you're not together anymore. I'm just going on what Finley must think from me and Steve.
I feel like my wife might have been sending you messages to ask these questions.
Oh, no, it's just because, like, it's how we work it as a family. It's like get the Saturday, Steve gets the Sunday to look after Finley. Okay. So cheat. I do park run with Finley, and then I do a long run on Sunday as well. So then I get like can do two things. But yeah, how do you guys work it?
To be honest, my wife works part time. So on a Saturday, she work a short shift, so from 8 till 2 typically. So I don't mind running early in the morning. So it's not uncommon to get up like 4 a.m. to get my run in.
Oh, okay.
So like this Saturday, for example, my wife's on a long day on Saturday, and I've got a 4-hour run to do on my plan.
Yeah.
So I need to be home by 7:45 on Saturday morning. So, you know, if I've got time, sometimes I'll go to the Cilydian Range in North Wales and do some hilly stuff. Obviously, we've done the Reckies. But this week, I'll probably do something local. There's like a kilometre loop of trail, you know, that I can run. So I'll probably just, sounds a bit horrendous, but probably just do that for 4 hours, just go round and round and round.
Wow, you definitely have got what it takes to do the spine race and stuff like that. Yeah, if you're thinking a kilometre round and round for 4 hours is going to be fine for you, then yes.
It's just
it sounds brilliant.
It's trying to fit, like, just squeeze it in where I can. Say I need to be home by 7:45, so I know if I go any further, I can run further out on some nice trails.
Yeah.
But then it's just a nightmare trying to get back on time. Whereas if I'm a kilometre, if I have a bit of a bad day, I'm only a mile away from home. So
yeah, you can just come back. Yeah.
I just
really am really in awe of people like you and like Jasmine Paris that get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning to fit training in, because I am not that dedicated. Like, I mainly do mine, like I drop Finley off at nursery and then at 9 o'clock I do an hour of training instead of a lunch break. So
Or
Steve looks after him on the Sunday. So I just am so in awe. Like, how do you even get up at 4 o'clock in the morning? Do you have to go to bed really early?
Yeah, I do hit the wall, sort of. You know, me and my wife are slightly different, and she's really, really good of a night. So, you know, if we look at it, at the moment I'm on split day, so Marcus got me running, like, for example, yesterday I was out in the morning and I was out again in the evening.
Okay.
So to try and make it manageable, because obviously with the children, I can't really go out for 2 hours on a Tuesday, you know, as an example. So I'll split it between a morning and an afternoon or an evening run. But my wife's really good of a night, so she'll prep all the packed lunches and what have you, and then in the morning I'll get out, do my run early, come home, you know, do her packed lunch and the kids' packed lunch and make her a brew and then get the kids up from there. So it works really well, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, she is really, really good. I take the mick out of her and things, but she...
I wouldn't, if I was you. she sounds, like, amazing. You
know, she is really good, because it gets to like 9 p.m. and I am gone. So if I'm laying on the sofa, sitting on the sofa, I'm asleep, you know, I'm not very good of an evening.
Yeah. Oh, well, you can't be if you're getting up at four, but yeah, that sounds amazing. Wow. This is incredible. I'm just wondering if you've got a tip for normal people, for the arc of attrition. Sorry, not the arc of attrition. That's the one I was doing. I mean, the ring of fire. If you've got a tip for the ring of fire for normal people who might want to give it a go after they've listened to your exciting story.
Like the ring of fire is ace. I think it's the best run. I mean, the reason I've gone back is because it's such a really well-run event. The organisers are brilliant, the location's amazing, the competitors are really good, and everyone's, you know, really friendly event. Obviously, I mentioned before about the firelighter, so there was a concern about completing the 3 days. The firelighter's a really good first day to go, and I know, you know, I mentioned Amber before, she'd done that a couple of times, and then she's done the Ring of Fire the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, so the firelighter's the single-day ultra,
yeah,
that's the first day, like 35 miles.
Yeah, so if you go on that and sort of, you'll know what you can expect, really. But... you know, it's not the most expensive race in the world. So if you look at, you know, the cost of, I don't know, we say Dragon's Back or
Spine Race,
yeah, just the kit list it's alone is horrendous.
Yeah.
But the Ring of Fire is really reasonable priced for what you get. So I'd say just jump at it and, you know, just get used to being out for an awful long time. And there's lots of people who can do it.
Yeah, awesome. Oh, well, you've convinced one person. Philip Haddock has just gone on the live to say, I'm definitely going to give it a go.
Brilliant.
That's amazing. Yeah,
brilliant.
Cool. So I've just got some quick fire questions for you before we thank NAC, our sports nutrition sponsor, and before we thank you, Terry, and let you get back to work to your meetings. Quick fire questions. Flapjack or gels?
Flapjack.
Beer or wine?
Beer. Yeah, definitely beer. Oh, it depends on what I'm doing, but if I finish the race, it would be beer. If I'm going for a meal or something, probably wine.
Good man. Kindle or real book?
A real book, 100%.
One you can rip the page out of.
Yeah.
On the Ring of Fire. Music on your run through headphones or birdsong?
A weird one, really, because I've never ran in a race with headphones. But on training, I will mix it up and I'll listen to some podcasts or I'll listen to some, depending on what I'm doing. So I'll listen to some music sometimes. So like a bit of a balance, I don't mind either.
Yeah, a bit of both. Yep. Yeah. That's funny. I've just thought, yeah, that's what I do. I train with the stuff and then I race without the stuff because I'm talking to people and taking it in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What about camping or glamping?
It would be glamping. The only way I'm getting my family to come along with me is if we glamp.
Glamping, excellent. A seaside run or a mountain run?
Mountain every day of the week.
Awesome. And would you consider yourself an ultra runner or an ultra hiker?
I don't know. I think ultra running is brilliant because you can hike as well, but I would still say I still class myself as a runner, I think.
Yes, I think you are. I think you are one of the runners. I'll be an ultra hiker. If there's too much running on an ultra, I'm like, what's this? Where's the steep, rocky stuff? Awesome. So those are the quick fire questions. And before we go, the podcast and broadcast is sponsored by NAC Sports Nutrition, who make long-lasting energy bars, waffles and drinks using high-quality sustainable ingredients. So I'll be using NAC on my next race, which is a Coventry Way Ultra by the Long Distance Walkers Association in April. So go to uk.nac.com for more, and use the 15% discount code as well as Wild Ginger Running in the film description below and the podcast show notes below. So thank you very much, Terry. It's been a real pleasure to chat to you today about the Ring of Fire, and I just want to wish you all the best in your 2024 endeavours and 2025 Spine Race as well.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on. It's been brilliant.
Cool. Well, bye everyone. Thanks for watching, and yeah, good luck again, Terry.
Thank you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.